You and I back together again, chatting it up. Brand new week, Monday style, August 25th, 2025 on Connecticut Today. We welcomed our friend, CBS News DC reporter Aaron Navarro to the program on the possibility of the Trump White House sending some federal forces to help police the city of Chicago. And I also chimed in on that possible course of action as well. Also, we welcomed our friend, Yankee Institute blogger Andrew Fowler on the program to chat about Connecticut's poor standing in a recent so-called fun index from WalletHub. Well, some may say it's taking the bait. Others may say it's fighting back against Mr. Trump. As we speak right now, Governor J.B. Pritzker is pushing back with some prepared remarks after the president said, hey, maybe he'll send the National Guard or get the Guard called up to Chicago, as they have just come off another weekend of violence there. Joining us right now from the White House, where there is never a dull day, CBS News reporter Aaron Navarro. Aaron, there's never a dull day, right? I mean, you guys must walk in there to the press room and say, okay, what's it going to be today, right?
It's been history every day since this administration, since the campaign. So I'm just expecting it. It's a regular type of environment now.
So what are the we get word, Aaron Navarro, of this special National Guard unit. The Guard's going to start carrying weapons in D.C. The president says, hey, maybe Chicago next, maybe Oakland, maybe San Francisco. What's the latest you guys and gals are hearing today?
It seems that all eyes are now on Chicago. Now, the president did not commit fully to sending in the military to Chicago, saying he may wait for that to happen, saying that he doesn't want to go in his words, quote, do a great job, and then have local city officials in Chicago, who he has not talked to yet, kind of claim credit for a lower crime rate. But you're certainly seeing D.C. as the test case for that. You saw over the weekend and saw today Secretary Hegseth note that the National Guard members in D.C. are now going to be armed at the president's direction. And you're seeing this administration tout that there haven't been no murders or homicides in D.C. that have been recorded, at least in the past 11 or 12 days. So they feel that they are doing a great job in terms of curbing the crime here in D.C. They're seeing many argue against that. And they're saying, well, let's take the show on the road. Let's go to some other Democratic controlled cities like Chicago, Baltimore, or Oakland.
Aaron, of course, you're in the district, and you go from anywhere in the capital there all around the district. Have you yourself, in your travels there to and from work and on the weekends, have you seen the Guard members? Are they interacting with people? Are they in spots where you expected them, where you didn't expect them? What have your eyes seen?
Yeah, you know, what I've seen is them certainly around higher traffic areas, not necessarily higher traffic for crime, just higher traffic for people. There's a popular going out street near where I live, where I was out over the weekend, where I saw about 15 to 20 Guard members just kind of patrolling, sometimes talking to people, some people going up to pictures, some people yelling at them. So it's definitely a varied mix. But the overall sense from a lot of D.C. locals is that they would prefer to see them in more high crime areas. And that's where you have seen this administration tout that some of their non-immigration arrests have come, Ward 7 and 8 out here, where there is a higher spike in crime. At least compared to maybe a decade or so ago. But the overall argument is that many officials here, residents, don't believe that it's at the level where it's a full-on emergency that President Trump has justified to bring these military forces, National Guard, into the nation's capital.
All right, Aaron Navarro, CBS News, working and living in the district. Aaron, thank you. We appreciate it, my friend. Stay safe.
Thank you, Paul. You too.
Thanks. Appreciate it. There you go. All right. So I'm going to start the show today. I'm going to read a list of days and times, and I'll tell you what those days and times mean in just a moment. And you'll get the idea here. Friday at 10:55 p.m. Friday at 11:51 p.m. This is Friday last. Now, while you and I were enjoying the weekend on Saturday, at 12:15 a.m., 1 a.m., 2:45 a.m., 5:19 a.m., 7:13 a.m., 9:12 a.m., 12:50 p.m., 7:54 p.m., 7:59 p.m., 10:59 p.m., and 11:16 p.m. Now we segue into Sunday. Many of you may have had a nice Sunday yesterday with the weather and all. Sunday at 12 or 25 a.m. in the morning, 1:42 a.m., 1:46 a.m., 2:59 a.m., 1:17 p.m., 4:43 p.m., 6:30 p.m., 9:12 p.m., 9:42 p.m., 10:23 p.m., 11:48 p.m., and 11:58 p.m. And hey, just for you-know-whats and giggles, let's throw in a couple of timestamps from this morning after the stroke of midnight local time, 12:15 a.m. and 3:20 a.m. What do those timestamps all have in common? You know what they are? The times that people were shot in the city of Chicago, which, of course, happens every weekend. All you have to do, I'm continuing a discussion we had last week. What did I tell you? What did I tell you was your homework assignment for this morning before we met together this afternoon? Go to your web browser on your phone or on your PC or whatever, or your Mac, for you creative types, and type in something like shootings this past weekend in Chicago. And there you go. From our parent network here, CBS News, 6 dead, 27 hurt in Chicago weekend shootings, 33 shootings in Chicago, and yet their incompetent mayor, Brandon Johnson, and yes, he is the most incompetent mayor in the country, even his own people who voted for him can't stand him. Even that, oh, Trump wants a war on the poor, we're calling it. That's the new that's the new focus group tested thing, war on the poor. Now, again, is a lot of this notion here of sending a new National Guard unit in, to help cities here, is a lot of this to stroke Trump's ego? Well, of course it is. You don't think people know this 80-year-old guy right now? Nobody has to peel back the onions here to find out, layers of the onion, rather, to find out what Trump is here. But can you imagine if Barack Obama, let's spin the table around here. Let's do a 180. Can you imagine if Barack Obama, now, I know what you're going to say, well, he wouldn't do this because of his feelings about the government, law enforcement. Okay, fine, whatever. But let's just do playtime here, okay? How about just a little bit of playtime? Imagine if Barack Obama was in the White House, Democrat, and he was looking at some red cities, or blue cities for that matter. Let's say blue cities. And let's say that Barack Obama said to the mayor of Chicago, Brandon Johnson, hey, mayor incompetent. No, I'm just kidding. To Brandon Johnson, said, hey, mayor, or to Mayor Eric Adams of New York City, or to Mayor Michelle Wu of Boston, hey, I don't like the numbers I'm seeing there of African-American people by and large, Hispanic people by and large, getting shot and wounded. I'm going to send in a couple of hundred National Guard people. I want them to, ride along with your police there, be an extra set of eyes, maybe do clerical work too, processing work to get more cops in the field. Now, what do you think Michelle Wu would say? What do you think Eric Adams would say? What do you think Brandon Johnson would say? You know damn well they may have some misgivings about it, but they're going to say, okay. Why? Well, because Barack Obama was a minority, black father, and he was a Democrat. So come on, is there any doubt here as to why a lot of these mayors are pushing back on the Trump push here to get some extra eyes and ears on the ground in these cities? And again, I asked it last week, and I'll ask it again this week. Why aren't we going here by the old, tried and true, progressive mantra of, well, if it saves one person, oh my God, you gun owners, you're such Neanderthals. You already have 17 guns. If this saves one person, isn't it worth it? Well, if these guard troops or DEA people or whomever or whatever's on the ground, if that saves one person in Chicago from getting shot or killed, if it were to save one person in maybe the city of Baltimore from getting shot or killed? What's wrong with that? Or is this all based on skin color? I mean, should we just cut to the chase here, call it what it is? Is this all on party affiliation and skin color? Because you know damn well if a Democrat asked minority mayors of certain cities to do this, you know damn well they'd say no. They may bite their lip, but they would do it. They would do it for their party. I get it. I understand that. So please explain to me what's the logic, the actual logic. Stop with the politics, but what is the actual logic here? Now, you want to have constitutional issues about this? Yes. But if it's, and by the way, look at the arrest numbers and stuff in D.C. that have dropped somewhat, bigger in some categories, not as big in other categories, in D.C. since the National Guard got on the scene there, right? But yet you had, and again, something's wrong with these crowds. I saw them again over the weekend, not a black or Hispanic person in sight. As far as I saw on the video of some of these things in D.C., it's all white, young, good-looking. Oh, police, get out. Get out of D.C. I don't know. There's something going on here. But I don't get this. You tell me 6 people were killed, 27 others hurt in Chicago from weekend shootings. Should President Trump send in federal forces? Abso-freaking-lutely he should, and he should do it to other cities. Why are Democratic governors, why are Democratic mayors okay with this level of violence? Can somebody explain that to me? Well, you know, Trump only wants it for his ego. I don't care why he wants it. If it saves lives, what the hell is the problem? Oh, I know it may show that one party is softer on crime. Well, they are. They are. All this no cash bail stuff, we'll get to that later. And how about this illegal, this truck driver in California, an illegal, got a CDL license and allegedly killed 3 people. How's that working out? But remember, it's all Trump's the problem. And I understand there are things not to like about him, I get it. But my God, when is the once great Democratic Party going to emerge from their psychosis and understand how stupid they look? 6 people killed, 27 others hurt in Chicago from weekend shootings. Should the White House send in federal forces? Abso-freaking-lutely. According to some news outlets I looked at from the Chicago market, around about 254 people have been shot and killed in Chicago this year. 254 in one of the nation's biggest and most beautiful and most visitable cities. I've been there. I think my son's got a show to do there in a couple of weeks. So Chicago's a nice city, but 254 shootings in Chicago this year. Now, can you imagine, God forbid, and I'm only putting this out there for, you know, a discussion here, a comparison. Can you imagine if we had 100 or 200, people killed on an airliner, on a big airliner? Say somebody stood up in the middle of an airliner and somehow they were able to get a gun past the TSA, past security, past the magnetometers, past the x-rays, and they opened up and killed everybody on a plane on the tarmac. Maybe in one of the bigger planes, that would be 250, 300 people. Oh, my God. And with good reason, it would be the lead story everywhere. And Dick Blumenthal and Chris Murphy and Johanna Hayes and Jim Himes and Rosa DeLauro and John Larson and Joe Courtney, they'd be, oh, the guns, we got to get rid of the guns. Yeah, but look what happened, 254 people in Chicago killed this year. Has anybody said anything? No, because they accept it. And look, I know there are limitations to local law enforcement, but I got to tell you something, whether you love or hate the guy, one thing Trump is showing incredibly in this run of saying he wants to crack down on violence, whether he's honestly for it or not, whether he thinks it strokes his ego or not, he is backing the Democratic Party into a corner like I never thought anyone could on crime. He's got Democratic leaders across the country now afraid that he may send in some National Guard people to help stop crime. When did the modern-day Democratic Party turn into the nutcase house they are? Seriously, when did that happen? Well, what are they supposed to do, Paul? Very easy. Say, you know, Mr. President, we think we can handle it here, but if, sir, you would like to give us some extra help for a limited amount of time, we would gladly accept that, and we'd love to work with the White House, perhaps, on getting more federal funding in here so we could hire more of our own officers. See? Fixed it for you right there. Both sides are happy. But that's not going to happen. Because the once great Democratic Party is run by nutcases. It's run there, run by leftist nut jobs there who can't handle what's happening here. And right now you have a guy in the Oval Office who many of them think is crazy, and he's nuts. He's crazy like a fox. And he is backing you people into a corner of being complacent about crime. He is. He's saying, here, let me send in a couple of hundred guard here and there. They can walk with the cops. They can help with ancillary stuff. The guard cannot make arrests. Do you understand that? And he knows this. But they do help in some areas, restraining suspects, keeping an eye out, whatever. But he has got the left of this country so flummoxed, they have no idea what to do. They're actually coming out in favor of crime, essentially. Instead of saying, thank you, Mr. President, as they would have with Barack Hussein Obama. Yes, they would have. As they would have with Bill Clinton, if he did this. They ain't going to do it with Trump. What did I tell you last week? The Trump triad. Immigration and the border, crime, and social consciousness issues. There it is. Again and again. He now has the city of Chicago where this past weekend you had several dozen people shot, some killed, saying, no, we don't need the help. And what's Brandon Johnson saying? He's declaring war on poor people. Oh, my God. This guy. This guy makes Lori Lightfoot look like Ronald Reagan. Oh, my God. Six people killed, 27 others hurt in Chicago from shootings on the weekend. Should President Trump send in more federal forces to the Windy City? Maybe get this thing shut down. Here's how sad it is in Chicago. There was a headline around the first of the year. I saw this. And it reads something to the effect of city leaders point to progress. There were fewer than 600 murders in 2024 for the first time since 2019. They're turning cartwheels because fewer than 600 people were shot in Chicago. But again, keep telling yourself Trump's the fault. Maybe you're on vacation somewhere with you and the missus and the mister or the domestic partner, boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever. Or you're on a business trip and hey, where are you from? Well, I'm from Connecticut. And does anybody really say Connecticut? Wow, that must be fun. Well, apparently not enough people do that. Little tongue-in-cheek here, but we love the stuff that Wallet Hub does. A lot of these financial sites now have their own metrics. They run this stuff. And apparently, Connecticut, just the way I harp over the fact that our friendliness to business ratings suck, so does our parent fun coefficient here. Joining us right now, our buddy Andrew Fowler, blogger, researcher for the Yankee Institute of Connecticut. Andrew, good afternoon. Great to have you, man. How are you?
Doing very well. Thanks for having me back on.
We're just not a fun place, Andrew. How dare these people at Wallet Hub? What you've poured through the fun and non-fun numbers here, Andrew. What? My God. Oh, the humanity. What's the bad news here?
Well, I mean, Connecticut is not considered a fun state. We're ranked 43rd in a new Wallet Hub report. Oh. And as I say in the piece, you know, this is not just a quirky detail, but it really does reveal a deeper and prolonged affordability problem mm-hmm. in the state. And it's connected to high taxes and burdensome regulations. And that directly impacts people's quality of life. So it really is concerning that, you know, this isn't just the first Walt Hub report that has said, oh, Connecticut is ranked in the bottom tier of, of their studies. They came out with a couple earlier this year, like the best and worst states to start a business. We were ranked 49th. And in two May studies, we were among the least affordable housing markets and worst places to raise a family. Now, it's just, it's where there's smoke, there's fire, right? And, you know, a lot of our lawmakers are concerned about affordability. I think the best place to start is how do we actually make it more affordable and help people keep the, more money in their pocket and make it more friendly environment to actually start a business, which, you know, thus creates more nightlife or bars or restaurants and
things
where people can.
And I know because exactly, Andrew, people may be listening going, oh, come on, it's a tongue-in-cheek thing. No, it's not, because as you mentioned, Andrew Fowler, a lot of it has to do with, and I remember this from my college-level economics courses in marketing, you can't have any fun generally without disposable income. And what eats away at disposable income? Taxes and high expenses.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I quote in the piece, you know, this is the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, which says when businesses face lower tax burdens, they have more capital to invest in operations, innovation, and expansion, leading to job creation and increased productivity. It just, it's common sense that, you know, if you lower taxes, you make something less, you know, you ease the burden of getting a business off the ground. That creates a more vibrant society and a vibrant civil society, which is, you know, that's what we're concerned with at Yankee Institute. It's how do we make life more affordable for our residents, our hardworking families, so they can actually stay, grow, and thrive and play here and have fun here. We want Connecticut to be a fun state.
No, absolutely. And you know, I don't doubt Andrew Fowler in any way that these surveys now from people like Wallet Hub, they do a great job at it. I mean, if people are in the general area of the country are saying, well, do I take the job there? There's this company in Connecticut, or we could live just over the line. I don't doubt, Andrew, that people look at the, as much as lawmakers on one side of the aisle or the other will poo-poo these, I think they do that at their own risk, don't you?
I think so. I mean, and Wallet Hub isn't the only, group out there that's doing these type of surveys that does rank Connecticut pretty low in on those affordability metrics, like, you know, economic growth or housing or energy costs or even, tax burdens. Those are from, either federal government or, tax foundation or, you know, realtor.com, it's a plethora of organizations out there that are saying that, hey, this is a problem. And it hurts to see because, there are people who are trying to make ends meet in Connecticut, want to stay here, want to raise their family here. But again, it's how do we increase the tax base? Mm. It's actually making it less burdensome and creating more jobs, which has a profound ripple effect. And the opposite is true. If you increase taxes and whatnot, you reduce the tax base and you have fewer less revenue to fund government programs. And so it's a vicious cycle that needs to be fixed and fixed fast.
And Andrew, finally, I'm looking over the different criteria that they graded Connecticut on and all these other states. It's interesting that one of the criteria here, and maybe this has to do with lawmaking or not lawmaking, time of last call. I find that was, I guess there's some fun attached to that, right, Andrew? Andrew, I'm not insinuating anything with you folks at Yankee Institute here, but you know what I mean, wink, wink, right?
Well, I mean, no one wants to hear closing time at 11 p.m., right?
But, that's right.
I should actually mention, too, that, you know, this is like one way to actually fix this is by adhering to the fiscal guardrails.
Yes.
You know, this is we've made fiscal progress since 2017 when we had that budget crisis. And these reforms have helped us from budget shortfalls and tax hikes. Mm-hmm. And it's but, you know, the first instance that it's like, oh, we have money saved up in our reserves and et cetera, et cetera. It's like, oh, we can loosen the guardrails. It's like, no, this is it might not be fun to not spend as much as you want, yeah. But it will be beneficial in the long run. I mean, the adhering to the fiscal guardrails is the surest way to promote prosperity for everyone, not just, you know, a few. It will benefit everyone.
Absolutely. Andrew Fowler, check out his piece, part serious, part tongue-in-cheek, Connecticut's low fun rank linked to high taxes and strict regulations. Andrew, always good to have you on, man. Take care. Travel safely. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. Andrew Fowler. All right, there you go.